Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. For Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department, by the way, that backs it all up every step of the way. Routine, too difficult to handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So far in the playoffs, the Texas Rangers have played 6 road games, 1 home game. The Arizona Diamondbacks have played 6 road games, 1 home game. But there's one team that's played 6 home games so far, and that's the Philadelphia Phillies, and they're hitting lots of home runs.
High drive into right center. He's watching. It's flying. Goodbye. Schwarber strikes again.
Second home run of the night for Kyle Schwarber. And the Phillies are on top 3-0.
And it was almost like he was sitting on that pitch. Full extension, 427 feet.
When he barrels it, they look like golf balls going out of here.
I mean, who does their scheduling? Brian Cashman? What? They play nothing but home games. Everybody else has to play on the road.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
Yeah, I thought about that last night. Like, Texas is going to play their second home game tonight. Wow. Look how far they've gotten. They're in the same spot the Phillies are. And then Arizona will finally get a chance to play their second home game of the playoffs coming up. So, and that'll be tomorrow afternoon, by the way. It's an afternoon game tomorrow at 4:30. Okay. Because Texas and Houston will get the primetime slot tonight and tomorrow. All right. Let's bring in the outstanding Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Sir, welcome. It's always great to have you with us. Hell, there's Donnie.
You there?
Hey, how are you?
Yeah. It's good to be here, Steve. I was interested in the – I didn't realize Texas had only played the one home game.
That's it. They've played one. Arizona's played one. That's
it. Yeah. Oh, Arizona's only played one. Jeez.
Yeah. Everybody's jumping up and down about how great the Phillies crowd happens to be. That's because they play every game at home.
Yeah. That's why they win all the time, too.
It doesn't hurt them. Okay. So let's get to Penn State. 6 games in, now you at least have something to evaluate and really look at pro and con. So what are the pros and cons of what you've seen through a month and a half?
It's a tough one because we haven't – I don't want to say anything is a con necessarily because they've won every game and they haven't had to do some of the things that I would say are – quote-unquote cons at this point. But, you know, we haven't seen them make a million big plays down the field. We haven't seen them break the big runs on offense. And I think, you know, there's some questions. Can Drew Aller make those deep throws one-on-one? And we've heard all about the, you know, everybody knows that's probably the answer. But to the same point, they haven't had to do – and they've certainly had a lot of success on that side of the ball, scoring points and making the most of opportunities and matriculating the ball down the field and playing kind of an old school style. And I think they're kind of on offense. To me, getting back to the pro side here, offensively they've been a little bit more, I don't want to say professional, but I guess that's the word I'm going to use, professional in their approach. Because I thought beginning of the season, You got a group here with a lot of young guys, and young teams, when they're young and talented, tend to make a lot of big plays and some mistakes. But this team hasn't made as many big plays as I thought, but they haven't made anywhere near the mistakes I thought they might either. So I think they're playing winning offense, which is, and James keeps saying this, good complementary football the way the defense is playing. And I don't see a con with the defense so far. I mean, there's nothing I think negative that the defense has done outside of, you know, maybe not played anybody. But that's certainly not their fault. But, you know, hey, the Iowa game at the time is a big game. Everybody's talking about that game, and they go out and dominate the game. Iowa runs 35 plays against them, 3-and-out after 3-and-out. But I think the best thing you could say about this team right now is the defense is playing at a level you thought they would be able to, and the offense isn't making any mistakes. And if they keep playing at that level, then there's going to be some reason for his excitement. But there's always going to be with fans, the media, and that, like, oh, what aren't they doing? Well, they're not making a million big plays, but again, they haven't really had to. So I don't know if I count that as a negative. I mean, and a week ago, I would have said the con is I don't think they were as good on special teams as I think they could be. But then they go out and get a guy returning two punts for scores and playing pretty well on special teams last week. So I think they've shown a little bit of everything, and I think that's probably the biggest thing that you could say about this team.
Something that has been, I think, consistent in Penn State playing Ohio State is that Ohio's done a great job of getting pressure against Penn State quarterbacks off the edge. What has been your thought on the play of the Penn State offensive line to this point?
I think they've been great. Olu, obviously, is a, you know, I don't know if I'd pick another left tackle in the country. Yeah. to put on that side, to put in there. I think he might be the first player I pick of anybody. Yeah, you know, if I'm starting a college football team right now, he's that good. He's that consistent. He's that steady. You almost forget he's out there. I actually during games I'll watch a series and just put the binoculars on Olu to watch and remind myself how good he is, because if you didn't watch him, you wouldn't know he was there. He takes guys out of games. So, but you know, I knew Olu would be good. I think Caden Wallace is playing his best football. Mm-hmm. So I think that pressure off the edge, and even when there's no real drop off when Drew Shelton's in there either. So I think that pressure off the edge is something that and it killed them last year. It just destroyed Penn State last year in that game against Ohio State, because Tuimoloau got to Clifford a couple of times and was able to change what Penn State was, you know, force him into some turnovers and change what they wanted to do late in that game. So I think that is a big deal in this game, but I think they've been really good this year. I don't think that will be a problem this week for them. I think they'll. Of course, there's going to be some instances where, because Ohio State's talented, they always are. There's going to be some instances where they put some pressure on Aller, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near the consistency that we saw that last year with Tuimoloau against these two tackles. Now, that said, I think a bigger deal here too, that nobody mentions, is Hunter Norzad has stepped in where Drew Scruggs was and continued to play a really dominant center. At times, he's playing he's playing at an elite level at center at times this season. So he's done a great job. And I think if JB Nelson can come back, I think that would be a real bonus for them this week, because Nelson, I thought, was playing pretty well and pretty steady. But again, you know, Wormley, you know, Vega, those guys have played well at times. And, you know, certainly Wormley's played pretty well, you know, from the start of the season on. So I think this is the one time I think I can remember where Penn State, I think, has a decided edge in the trenches against Ohio State. And I think that if they can go in there and get a win, they'll have played very well in the trenches. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only way that this could happen.
Yeah, Tuimoloau last year started the game against Olu, and he couldn't get anything done, and they flipped him to the other side. And for the fans thinking, yeah, he went over to Wallace's side and look what he did. People forget Wallace didn't play in last year's game. He was hurt and couldn't play, and I think having him over there is a stabilizing factor. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and honestly, I went and looked at that game last year the week after, and I thought, because Effner was in there for Wallace,
yeah.
I didn't think he played all bad.
No,
you know, I think JT Tuimoloau made plays in big moments, and was, you know, and they forced turnovers, and that always magnifies. But I think he made a couple of big plays in that game. Otherwise, I think they did a good job against him. But certainly, and this is no knock on Effner, who was a good player.
He
was a serviceable guy, but he's not Caden Wallace. And you know, having Wallace out there, I think, especially playing the way he is right now, he's another guy, again, you forget you got him, because he's playing so well. But I think if he plays to the level he's played this year, I think he's going to give you a much better shot at controlling those big plays that Tui Moloa's made. And look, he makes them against everybody. Go back in the Notre Dame game. He made a couple of big plays in the Notre Dame game. He made a couple of big plays against Purdue.
Yep.
You know, he's that's what he does. He shows up in big spots. But if you can control that a little bit, and I think part of controlling that is not just blocking him. I think part of it is running the ball well and doing some things where you're not forcing yourself to throw in big spots if you don't have to. Keeping yourself balanced and being able to not, you know. Trademark is the word I'm looking for. What you're going to have to do, because where he could pin his ears back and go after you. I think the whole offensive scheme puts them in a position to control what JTT does. But certainly, I don't think they're going to put him on Olu this year because you're right, he didn't do anything against the guy last year.
No, zero. But let's flip it to the other side. Penn State's ability to get to Kyle McCord, or at least get him off his spot, which has not been his comfort level. What do you see, especially on the edges in the matchups there?
Yeah, I think they have a really good chance to put some pressure on McCord in this game. They have Ohio State's got good tackles. I don't know if they've played up to that level this year at times, but that's the knock on Ohio State right now. Ohio State's got an offensive line that they feel is suspect out there in Columbus. So, and I think Penn State's defensive line has played very well. So, and for the first time here, you look back at the quarterbacks they've had. Even Stroud could run it a little bit. JT Barrett certainly was a pretty good runner. Justin Fields a really, really good runner. I don't think McCord is. I think McCord wants to stay back there. He'll move a little bit. He's kind of like Drew, in the sense that he'll move if he has to. He'll get yards when he has to, but that's not a big part of his game. Stroud was like that to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But I think if you kind of can get him out of it, get him on the move a little bit, that's playing to the strength you want to play. I mean, and that's what Penn State's done very well. I think sacks maybe a little bit overrated a stat sometimes because you can pile them up at the end of games. But the pressures aren't overrated. And these guys get a lot of pressure on quarterbacks. They have from the beginning of the year. I think, don't quote me on this, but I think like Chop Robinson only has a couple of sacks, but it seems like he's always in the quarterback's face. I think they have to consistently get in the face of McCord this week. And certainly you're not going to get there every play, but do it enough to make sure that, you know, especially on the down where you know they're throwing, you get a third and nine, you have a chance to get yourself off the field. I think that's a big thing for Penn State. Get off the field when you can in this game. And then a lot of this stuff is obvious, but, you know, hey, forced turnovers, yeah, that always helps. Get off the field on third and nine, yeah, of course. But I think Penn State, the way they're set up this year, they have a chance to do that a little more consistently than they have in the past.
That's why I mentioned getting him off the spot. I didn't say sacking him, getting him off the spot, making him make decisions quicker than he wants to.
Yeah, that's always the key. It's never, you know. I think it's always funny when these guys go, "Well, why don't you have as many sacks as you did a year ago or whatever?" Well, it's because you don't necessarily need to. You need to force the guy to do something he doesn't really want to do. It can make him uncomfortable because that's not just a one play thing. That's a whole game thing. If you can get a guy comfortable, you could change really the mentality of the offense that way.
How do you view the two running games coming in?
I think they're pretty similar. I mean, they have a lot of, you know, I think the big difference really is that it seems like Nick Singleton and Catron Allen are healthy, and there's some questions about, you know, guys like Mayan Williams and Travion Henderson, where they're two real big play guys. But, you know, Dallin Hayden's a pretty good player too. I think Ohio State's got a lot of guys there, but, you know, they haven't really run the ball, I think, as well as they have in past years, because their offense, there's so many questions on the offensive line. But I think, you know, when I made my prediction earlier on my podcast, I said, I really think Penn State, if they're going to win this game, they have to do it behind that offensive line with Singleton and Allen, kind of playing an old school style of game where they're churning out yards, playing the way they've played this year. and running the ball the way they played. I really thought against UMass. Now, I know people, it's UMass, but I thought some of the runs, especially from Singleton, I thought that was the best I had seen Singleton all year. Now, is he breaking 80-yard runs? No, but he's getting 7, 8. He's running hard. As James said yesterday, he's running over the safety instead of trying to run by him, which I think they don't want him to do every time. But certainly that sets a tone, and that's the way Catron runs. That's Catron's kind of game. So I think they're more similar than I think people give them some credit for. I think Nick's got this. You know, he's got all this speed. He's their outside guy. The thunder and lightning thing. I don't think it's that at all. I think the whole key to Penn State's offense is those guys are pretty similar. That you can interchange them when one needs a rest, you get the other one in there, and you don't really have to change everything you do. And I think those two guys are really the key for me in this game. Everyone's going to talk about Drew. I asked James about Drew yesterday about going home. I don't think Drew is the X factor. I think it's a running game. I think if they can run the ball pretty well, they got a really good shot. And hey, look, they have two of the better running backs in the Big Ten, so why shouldn't they run the ball pretty well?
And I think there's an area in this, let's go back to Drew, that helps him out a lot. I thought Catron Allen was always a good receiver. I feel Nicholas Singleton has really improved as a receiver. What does that mean to this offense that he has improved that much?
Yeah, I think that's huge. You know, that was the book on them. And last year, I think the book was the reality where, you know, Catron is getting some big catches. And he's had some this year. He's had some games where he's caught a pass or two and moved the sticks and done a good job. I think, but having Nick be able to do that, and you know, with his speed, I think that's where you want to get him. You do want to get him on the edge from time to time and be able to kind of get him in space and see what he can do. And I don't know if he's got that initial burst that Barkley had, but when he gets going, you know, he's a hard guy to bring down. And I think when you know that kind of gets going a little bit better in the passing game this year. And he was talking this morning on one of the Zoom calls. He really worked hard on that in the offseason. He knew that was a part of his game, that if he added that, he could really add to the quality of the offense and the scheme. And I think that's part of the reason that what those two guys could do catching the ball out of the backfield is, you know, it's a big part of why Penn State doesn't have to take a million shots down the field during the game where you're going to be hit and miss on those. You can take the easy ones, and those guys, you know, move the sticks that way. This whole offense and hints of it, to me, is it moves the sticks. It does it with relentless consistency, and part of that is because Singleton and Allen are guys now you have to focus on them out of the backfield. And quite frankly, nobody's done a good job shutting them down. That throw is an easy one for Drew to make. And to put the ball in their hands and let them kind of go after it, make some big plays that way. I think it's much more likely that they're going to make big plays in the passing game than in the running game, because they get the ball in open space so much more often. I just think that's, you know, for them to add that, especially for Singleton to add that to his game, is huge. I think Catron has it and always has, and we'll see if, you know, if that becomes a big factor in this game. I think it might. But Singleton's certainly the guy this year who's stepped up in that regard.
And finally, I'll ask you about Marvin Harrison, because I feel Kate Stover's a big factor in what they do, but it's because of the domino of Marvin Harrison. There's no question when the word elite can be misused, not in this guy's case. You've watched him a couple of years now. What's been your thought watching him?
Yeah, I mean, he's a bigger version of his dad.
Yes.
And his dad was one of the best receivers in the NFL for a very long time. And that's a Hall of Famer. So, like, yeah, I mean, I was going to ask that during the press conference to James. I asked the second question yesterday, and I was going to ask about Marvin Harrison, but he was the first question. That's how important he is. I mean, he was the first question in a press conference in a top 10 matchup. So how do you control the guy? And the answer is you don't. You try to limit his opportunities is what you do. But he's going to make his plays. He's 6'1", 6'. And James is right. He looks big. He looks bigger than that somehow.
Yep.
And he plays smaller. He plays like his dad. He's very smooth. He runs great routes. This is the best player Penn State's going to face this year. in my opinion, on the offensive side of the ball. So, you know, they have to kind of try to, I guess the way to put this is, you know, in their own minds, live with the damage he's going to do, because he's going to get a couple of throws deep. He's going to make plays one-on-one. He really got them going last week against Purdue. He made one of those, you know, those grabs. He pinned the ball against the defender. The guy had him covered, and Harrison's still catching the ball. So that's the kind of player he is. He's going to make an impact. You can't avoid it. He's too good not to. But could you, as a defense, and I think Penn State is uniquely positioned this week to maybe do this, could you limit the amount of big plays he can make? Could you deny him the ball sometimes? Could you do some things that'll get them to stop just trying to let him make plays one-on-one? And I think having Kalen King and Johnny Dixon helps in that regard, because they're at least cornerbacks who can match him skill-wise. But, hey, the best cornerback against the best receiver, you know, you have that matchup, and sometimes the cornerback wins the play and sometimes the receiver does. And Harrison's going to win his share of plays, and you have to try to figure out how to maybe control him a little bit. But if he has a 10-catch, 180-yard game like he's done in, you know, to some opponents this year and in years past, and like he did last year at Penn State, that's going to be that'd be a big boon for Ohio State for sure.
Donnie, my friend, it's always a great pleasure. Thanks so much for your thoughts and for being with us.
Thanks, Steve. Anytime.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. We're going to have Ryan Cashman on the show to explain why the Phillies get home games the way the Yankees do.
Oh, my almighty!
Did you guys finally get the 81-81 on home and away? Or did they end up 100-60?
I think it got out to 81-81.
I mean, I think it was like 100-62 in the ending. That made, to be honest with you, that made your record even worse. Just kidding. All right. We'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door, and some things that don't. Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory. With the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it all up. And they need more technicians, by the way. But they do a great job of backing it all up with great service, whether it happens to be routine, which everybody needs, or the difficult. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. This time I'm going to register a complaint. I know it's rare when I do. They're so used to you doing it, it's like an avalanche.
Oh, my almighty!
Do tell.
Yes. And that is about the treatment of James Madison. James Madison is a 6-0 football team. And having a terrific year in the Sun Belt Conference. Charles Huff and Marshall will play them tomorrow night. And that game will be in Charleston. It's a 7 o'clock game tomorrow night on ESPN. James Madison at 6-0 is not eligible still to play in a bowl game. James Madison still is not eligible to be considered not just for a bowl game, but for a New Year's Six bowl game. They could be 12-0, and they will be staying home. Why? Because there's this ridiculous, and it is ridiculous, 4-year waiting period as to making the transition to FBS from FCS. What? Who puts in stupid rules? Oh, wait a minute, I forgot. What a dumb rule. Dumb. You're either in or you're not. And they went through this last year. They claim it's about schedules and things like that. Well, gee, I noticed that the Big Ten was able to put out a revised schedule quickly as possible when they added Washington and Oregon. Gee, it sounds to me like you can do it. But this is the second year for James Madison in the transition from FCS to FBS. Every program that moves up has to undergo the transition period. Now, I guess the transition period's 2 years. I think I said four. It's 2 years. So, this is the second year of it. So, if they go 12-0, 8-0 in the Sun Belt, they can't play in the Sun Belt Championship game. They cannot play in a bowl game. And because they were FCS to FBS, it's two seasons. Had they been Division II to Division I, that's the one that lasts four seasons. Well, part of the reason is you may have a transition period. We have a group, a whole bunch of FCS games you have to play in combination with FBS games. But James Madison didn't do that. They played a full Sun Belt schedule right away last year. They applied for a waiver. Naturally, it was no. I just don't get what the thought process is on any decision in Indianapolis. I don't get any of it. It made no sense on the Tez Walker thing. It makes no sense on the James Madison thing. I mean, I'm somebody that tries to apply as much common sense as possible. If I'm looking at a team at like James Madison that transitions and plays a full conference schedule, FBS, and the other four games, if three of the four, or even two of the four, are FBS, that's 10 games. That's good enough for me. But they don't have the opportunity to do that. And they're 6-0. They are 6-0 this year. And Marshall's a good team. They're 4-2. And Charles has done a great job there. Charles is going to get a lot of interest, Charles Huff, from some other schools about, quote, moving up. And taking it, and we'll see if he wants to take it or not. Okay, so James Madison played Bucknell, so that's an FCS game. Then they played at Virginia. Oh, by the way, won. They played at Troy, FBS, won. At Utah State, FBS, won. South Alabama, conference game, won. Georgia Southern, conference game, won. These are all conference games or FBS games. They have one FCS team on their entire schedule, and that was the opener with Bucknell. That's it. Every other game is an FBS game, and you're telling me they don't qualify to be in a bowl game or to win the conference? They still have to play Marshall tomorrow. Then they take on Old Dominion, Ricky Ronnie's team. So they got back-to-back Penn State assistants coming up in Charles Huff and Ricky Ronnie. Then they're at Georgia State, so they got on to Atlanta. They've got UConn in Harrisonburg. Then they have Appalachian State in Harrisburg. Then they go down to Myrtle Beach and they play Coastal Carolina. And you're telling me this team isn't qualified for a bowl game? Who makes up these stupid rules? Take it on a case-by-case basis. Oh, that's why when you see Tez Walker and what happened with him in his transfer to North Carolina, when you see the fact that James Madison is on the outside looking in, they're undefeated, even though they've played, they're only going to play one FCS game. Penn State played Delaware. Ohio State played Youngstown State. So Ohio State, Penn State, and James Madison will all have something in common. They all will have one FCS opponent. The NCAA wonders why they have a credibility problem. That's part of it. So that's my complaint of the day.
And once again, another righteous one.
So, I don't get it. How can you sit there in Indianapolis and say, you know what? And they ask for a waiver. You're like, no, we can't do this. We have rules. You have rules, do you? Really? Like, for goodness sakes. I'm sure you're not out of complaints.
Well, for mine, we go from one entity where we don't understand decision-making to another, and ESPN. Did you see who was there going to be their latest College Hoops studio analyst?
I think it's Jim Boeheim, right?
You'd be correct. The curmudgeon, Jim Boeheim. First of all, once again, it goes back to the conversation we had a couple of weeks ago, how you can't just hand former players, coaches a microphone and expect them that they're going to be good. I mean, you've seen this guy in numerous press conferences. Whether he's actually being serious or, you know, passive-aggressive, whatever. This guy hates the media. And all of a sudden, he's going to be hired to be an analyst? Let alone have this 1980s, 1990s look at college basketball. He's the guy that I would least care about hearing his opinion about basketball nowadays. Please. It just adds to the slew of just horrible analysts that ESPN picks up just because they're name and recognizable, but they don't bring anything to the table.
I'll disagree with you on this, and I'll disagree with you on a couple of points with this. Jim's not coaching anymore, okay? And what that means, he doesn't have to meet with the media anymore or anything like that. I've been around Jim Boeheim a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit. And to be honest with you, he's actually engaging and funny. Now, his wife, Julie, is very outgoing. But he's actually engaging and funny and comfortable when he's not in that spot. And I think that's going to come out with him on TV. And number two, you can't deny he knows the game.
True, yes.
I mean, I can't deny he knows the game. And I think his personality, I'd be very surprised that it's not fun and engaging. And I know everybody expects it to be 180 of that, but I think it's going to be a little more fun, a little engaging than people realize. And plus, he knows basketball. So, you know what? I think it's worth a try. I think it's worth a try. I'd hire him. Because I think he knows what he's talking about, and it's not like he didn't coach last year, so he's up to date on every trend in the country. Okay, you know. And like I said, it's not like I've never been around him in a non-basketball situation. I have. And he's actually, to be honest with you, I mean, he's not the suit at the holiday party running around with the lampshade on his head.
But who is, really?
But I mean, and that is a great point by you. Who is, really? But he's actually more fun, engaging, one-liners than you would realize. I think by my... And I understand from your point of view why you would say that. Because in press conferences, it always felt like it was combative with him. But I think that, I think there's a chance we'll see more of his outgoing personality to go with his knowledge on this. Yeah, if I'm an ESPN, I think he's worth a try. What the heck? We'll see. But that's...
We will see.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see which one of us ends up being right. Because you could end up being absolutely right. Right? And then again, you know, it could work out where, like, maybe I'm right. I mean, nobody knows until we actually see it. And we're close to seeing it. It's going to be, it's only 3 weeks away.
I know, it's crazy.
It's unreal. So there we go.
Bucknell's opener is, I believe, it's the same day as Penn State on the 6th.
Yeah, 6th. Yep.
We got Delaware's. Delaware's coming here, and Penn State's got Delaware State.
By the way, remember when I was talking with Donnie about moving Kyle McCord off his spot? Do you know what his completion percentage is when he's pressured?
I'm going to say somewhere below 50.
28%. I know you don't think I do any research, but...
You know. Oh, my almighty!
But there you go.
You got more to give, Steve Jones.
I'm trying to pour my heart and soul into it, John. I'm trying. Trying. I mean, who else came up with this number? Come on. I mean, John, I told everybody what your free throw percentage was, but usually only when it was good. And most of the time it was good. All right. Yesterday, Matt brought up Joel Klatt. We'll hear his apology in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So, to be honest with you, I've only said hi to Joel Klatt a couple times. I've never had a meaningful conversation with him. He seems like a nice enough guy. I think he's a very good announcer. And look, we all know Matt brought up the other day, and I know he opened the show with this, but this is what he said on the Joel Klatt Show, the podcast, about what they said about James Franklin.
There was something brought up on the broadcast, and I just don't like the way that I handled it. It was brought up that James Franklin had talked in a press conference about scheduling, and he gave a long and thoughtful answer about scheduling, and in one point had insinuated, you know, there was one part of the quote that insinuated, like, hey, we got teams in this conference that are buying out of contracts in the non-conference, buying out of a tough game to just go play not a tough game, because the point he was trying to make is that undefeated is really the goal, not necessarily strength of schedule, which is not what the intent of the playoff was in its four-team format at its inception. And his point is correct. He gave a much more thoughtful answer than just the quote that I referred to. I want to be transparent enough with you, the listener, the viewer, and the fan of college football. You deserve to know when I feel like I wasn't at my best. What I said on the broadcast was not my best. Earlier in my career, I remember saying something about, like, hey, I gave a Nick Saban might be close to being done take on Coward. It was stupid. and it was the dumbest thing I've ever said on TV. I just want to make sure that I'm being transparent with you and saying, like, I said on the game, that's pretty rich for a guy playing UMass. Wrong way to handle it. Wish I could have had that one back. James had given a more thoughtful answer than that. And in live TV, stuff like that happens. My intent was not to take a shot at James Franklin. I'm here to tell you, I wish I would have handled that differently.
Hey, that's a pro. You know what? You don't get it right, you don't get it right. And when you say that and take the time to do it, I think your credibility actually goes up because you're not doubling down. Like, even when it's a bad shot with the chutter, the suit doubles down.
This is true.
I'm telling you, it worked. The ball went 4 feet. The ball's 20 feet past the hole. It worked. He doubles down. He scares me. But see, a class act does that. I always love the correction in the newspaper. X, blah, 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 blah. 2 days later, page 2, right-hand corner, very small print. Oops, our bad. Okay. Got a lot going on tomorrow. Dave Cicchini tomorrow, roundtable tomorrow, the King.
Yes, sir.
A lot going on tomorrow. Look forward to it. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors.